my Lubavitcher campaign, my pep talk for the Shluch for Lavad yesterday. And now we're going to do the wrap up to the Rashis. Let's just jump right into the Rashis. Pasaches. Eshrikol Lohem Vakabitsim Ki Fidisim. Rashi Pasaches says, Eshrikol Lohem Ki Der Hashurkim. Like people who whistle. Lissimon Ois Lavo Elov Lavo Elov. Hatoye Baderech. You're whistling. Come here. Come here. Don't go there. You're traveling with some of your friends and you're going down the path and you notice that with your companions, they are beginning to veer off the path, and you whistle, and the whistle serves as a signal. Don't go there. Come in my direction. You're going off the path. Okay, so you're just telling us over here.
You're trying to get a cab.
Yeah, and Hanan, that's right, to whistle. You're whistling. That this is very unique. Rashi is always very precise. Rashi was telling us over here, pshat in the pasuk. But he's saying over there that we have to define what period of time that we are we referring to. So Rashi, these psukim did not say. It's not so clear because Rashi in this last section, Rashi did not necessarily say that we're discussing the time of the Yavanim. Okay, that was back plus the Gimel. Rashi seems to waver a little bit back and forth between the time of the Yavanim, the time of the Chashmonaim, and the time of Mashiach. But Rashi here seems to say that the purpose of Hashem whistling is because we are about to veer off the path. Klal Yisrael is at a dangerous point in history. They are very, very close to making a fatal mistake of going off the derech. That's a very harsh term. Today, to say go off the derech means, that means like, you know, that's like, I didn't want to say those words, but it doesn't necessarily mean mamish to abandon Judaism, but it means to make a fundamental mistake in Hashkafa. And although at the moment, no big deal, but you have to think ahead. Ezeh chacham haroye es hanoilat. Little mistakes down the line, years later, have major consequences, have massive ramifications. Small little differences, they blossom, they mushroom into major shifts and splits in Klal Yisrael. And like, you know, if we go back and look at the various Gedolei Yisrael, go back 100 years ago, they all sat together in the same Beis Medrash, and they all were very good, close friends. And the differences between them, you couldn't even detect slight little differences. And then they went on to build communities, build institutions that today, unfortunately, they don't even talk to each other. Some of the institutions today that exist in this world today are not speaking terms with one another. And there's no reconciliation. There's no way they'll come together under any condition. And the people who were responsible for the establishment of some of these massive organizations that are today, they were sitting together hundreds of years ago at the same table, and they were the best of friends. You know, so we have a little difference of hashkafa. You appreciate something this way, I have this way. Kishem she'en partzu fe'em shavos kach ein de'o se'em shavos. The same way no two people look like, no two people think alike. Just because we don't think alike doesn't mean that we can't sit together at the same table and be mitzdarf to a minion, and at Shalosh Shuras we can all bench together. Come to Shalosh Shuras, you say your Shalosh Shuras Torah, I'll say my Shalosh Shuras Torah, and we'll pass around the kois. This week you'll bench, next week I'll bench. And yet today, these individuals who have created incredible things, somehow, we're not on the same page. So here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is warning us, don't we hear it together. Don't go on that path. Don't go on that exit. If you go on that exit, you're going to end up in a different place. And that's the significance. That is the symbolism. That is why, with precision, the word here is being used. The word Eshrika. Eshrika, according to Rashi, is a word which is a calling. A calling out to a person, do not go down that path. We're here together. I notice you're about to stray. You whistle, come here. Don't go there. That's not the right way to go. That's what it means. And that totally changes the depth of meaning of these psukim that we are learning together. So again, the pasuk according to Rashi, Eshrika, Kiderech Hashorkim, like the way of people who whistle, l'simon as a sign, l'simon ois as a sign, lovo elov hatoyeh baderech. The person who is making an error, he is veering off the path. Don't go down that path. V'akabet seim le'es haketz le'osid.
That's why the referee blows the whistle.
What do you mean? He blows his whistle
something is out of bounds. There's an illegal procedure, whatever it is. He blows the whistle.
I thought it was to draw your attention. I thought it was more of a way to draw attention. I want to make an announcement.
That's when you whistle for the cab.
Okay, all right, whatever. Okay. I will gather them. When will I gather them? I will gather them at the Eis L'Asid. I will gather them in the times of Mashiach. Kifidisim, Kisha Efdeim. I will redeem them. I will redeem them. Kisha Efdeim. Now, Rashi over here is obviously bothered by the grammatical form of this word. Kifidisim. Now, I would assume I'm not by any means knowledgeable in diktuk, but I would assume this is in the past tense. Ki fidisim. I have redeemed them. What do you mean I have redeemed them?
That's right. That's what apparently is bothering Rashi.
Right. So everyone seems to be struggling with this.
So he's making a correction.
Kisha efdein. When I will ki, it seems that the word ki, in grammar, there are a lot of rules which are very, very, you got to know your stuff. It seems that they're more, very often the prefix or even a word that comes before another word has the power to change the form of the word. If you take the word as is, fidisim, it means I have redeemed them in the past. But when you put the word ki before this word, it transforms it to the future. Just like you have the vav hamahapich. You have a word and you have a prefix, a letter. It's the same word. It's the same word, but you put a vav in the beginning of the word. It has the power to transform what otherwise would be the past tense to the future, or vice versa. Likewise, the same principle is true with not a vav, not a prefix, but a word, an entire word that precedes another word. Like in this example, ki, the word ki is coming to transform the literal meaning of the word fidisim. I have redeemed them. When you put the word ki before fidisim, when I will redeem them. Okay, that's what it would appear to be, how Rashi's understanding the grammar of this pasuk. Viravu bagoyla techila kumayishrav mitzrayim. Now, this is something very different than what we learned in the Mitzudas David. The Mitzudas David says that the word viravu kumayishravu means that when they will get a much deeper appreciation of the Mitzudas David, and really both Rashi and the Mitzudas David, when you compare one to the other. Let's take a step back. According to the Mitzudas David, this pasuk was addressing the times of Mashiach. Mashiach has already come. The Geula has already arrived. Hashem already has gathered us. We are now moved in. We have now all made Aliyah. We're all living in the land. We're living in Eretz Yisrael. And now when we're living in Eretz Yisrael, we will blossom. V'rav, we're going to blossom in number. We're going to increase in number. Six children in the womb in one shot. But wait a minute. Kimo, just like Kimo Ravu, just like the Jewish people increased in number when they were in Mitzrayim. Wait a minute, how can you compare the increase in population at the time of Geula to the increase in population in Golos? Golos was suffered. It was a different era. In Mitzrayim,
also a longer time frame.
It was, we don't know how long the Geula is going to be. I mean, what do you mean a longer time frame?
Well, we know how long the Golos has been.
Right, but we don't know how long the period of Geula will be. The Geula, whatever that means, the Geula, whatever that period is going to be. But how can you compare the Ravu, Kamo Sharavu? We're going to increase the number in the time of Geula, similar to the way that we increased the number in the times of Golos. Really? Is that really a proper analogy? We would expect that in Geula, we'll be able to increase even more. If in the time of Golos, a woman gave birth to six children in one shot, then in the time of Geula, she'll give birth to 16 children in one shot. Mark, you're going to pay all the tuitions? You can have time to go to the Chumash party for all of them, all of the great-grandchildren. Your whole day, you'll be busy nonstop going to a Chumash party, going to a Siddur party, going to a kindergarten graduation, and then you have to go to the Vart, and then you have to go. Can you imagine people? It's beautiful, right? About people, there are people like this. There are people like this. Baruch Hashem. I once actually heard someone complaining about this. He's blessed. He's blessed. He has, unfortunately, a very big tsar on his hands. Also, this fellow, he has someone in the family that's not well, which requires enormous time and care, Achman Litzlan, but Kinayin Nahara, he has quite a number of grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren, and he once basically said is that he's blessed that every single day there's something going on. It's either a Siddur party, a Chumash party, a Bar Mitzvah, a Shev Brachos, a Vart. He doesn't even know the names of his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren. He doesn't even know. Okay, he's Baruch Hashem, he's busy, he's so busy, and he goes, he likes to go, but it has taken a toll on him, and Rahman Wutzlan, it's mixed with a lot of tsar, because he's dealing with a very big tsar, as I told you. I remember once someone that's compared of Chaim Kanievsky as Shlita, he should be well and gesund, the tsar HaTayr of Klal Yisrael, and of Eliyah, and the Bodel Michaim L'Chaim, the Bodel Michaim L'Chaim of Eliyashiv. Zeichet Tzadik Kodesh Levracha, Yashiv Mamash, the Godel Hadar, the undisputed Godel Hadar, Abul Yashiv, and someone made this comment. I was at a Shabbos table, and there's a very wise person, a wise woman, in fact, who made this comment. And they said that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, Asar HaTorah, does not know, it's a fact, does not know the names of his great grandchildren. He doesn't know them. Imam, she doesn't know. Yes, then you have a son. You have grandson. What are their names? You have great-grandchildren. What are their names? I don't know. I don't know. Can I only have 200 great-grandchildren? Gets a little confusing. Well, Yashiv, Yibodel, Michaim, L'chaim, Yashiv, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Godel Hadar. He knew the name of every single great-grandchild. He knew the name of every single one, and he had just as many. And so, why? What's the difference? Does that mean that Yashiv Tzeichel Levracha was smarter, had a bit better IQ, he had a better memory? So this woman said, she just said, as a matter of fact, a very smart woman, she says, no. It means absolutely nothing. It means because Rabbi Yashiv had an interest. He wanted to know. He had an interest. You want to know. You know the names of all of your great grandchildren, even if there's a few hundred. Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, he knows Kol HaTorah Kulo. There's nothing he doesn't know. This was not important to him. It's not that it's not important to him. Of course, it's his family, it's his children, it's his great great grandchildren, it's his children. It's just not important to him. It's not a priority in his life. It's not a priority to know the names of every one of his great... He knows what he has to know. And it's so true. You know what you want to know. Okay, there's being smart, being in Eloi. If you don't want to know, it's not important to you. You can be the biggest Eloi, the biggest mind, the greatest mind. If it's not important to you, it's not important to you. And he's preoccupied with what he does. He knows what he wants to know, and this is just not an issue. So, over here, going back to our topic, this is something that is very disturbing. It's very disturbing. This only disturbing because of what Rashi says. Rashi says, "V'rav u'kamosh rav," it's got to be equal, tit for tat. It's got to be equal. That we have.
I don't know if that's literally true. I mean, what is true is that. Mitzrayim is the prototype for the Gula. That we know, we've said a number of times. But in terms of the Shisha Keres Achad, that's because we had six terms that hinted at that. Here we don't have that.
But Rashi...
It doesn't have to be exactly the same.
Right, it doesn't have to be exactly the same, but we cannot ignore that it says Veravu Kamo Sharavu. They will
something along the lines of the way it was in Mitzrayim.
Right, so now what are we comparing it to? Rashi says the pre-Geula, the Golus, the Zman, the era before the Geula occurs. Just like Mitzrayim, as you yourself, Rav Chaim, just said, is the prototype for the process, there was the Golus, followed by Geula. So too, the era of Golus leading into Geula will be identical. Just like in Mitzrayim, right before the Geula, it was Shisha Bekeres Echad. If you want to know that Mashiach is coming, how do you have a sign to know that Mashiach is coming when you see that women are having six children in one shot? Ravu, we're in Golus, we're now in Golus, and we are increasing in number. Kimoshe Ravu, just like our ancestors increased in Golus when they were in Egypt, it was Shisha Bekeres Echad. The Mitzudah Stavah did not say that. He said, Ravu, they will increase in number during the time of redemption, after the Geula has arrived. Similar to the way we increased in number when we were in Mitzrayim. Wait a minute, that's a very interesting point. To go and compare our Geula today to our Golus then, you would ordinarily want to compare Geula to Geula or Golus to Golus. Well, the way Rashi explains the pasuk makes us take note that the Mitzvah David says something very different, and indeed it is a little bit bizarre that we are going to increase the number in the time of Geula, similar to the way we increase the number during in the time of exile. Rashi doesn't want to say that. Rashi says, Ravu, they're going to increase by Goyla, in the Goyla, meaning pre-Geula period, Kimo Sheravu b'Mitzrayim. All right, let's go for the Pasuk test. The Ezra aim techila bo'amim. I will scatter them first. Rashi is taking the words. See, Rashi over here is touching upon what inspired me to give you my pep talk, my Chabad pep talk. Because the word, the Ezra'im, is the future tense. And Mitzudas David said was obviously very disturbed with the grammar. And therefore, the Mitzudas David had to bend backwards and say what it means is, although, even though back in the day, I scattered them throughout the entire world, no problem, I'll find you. I will find you. I will seek you out no matter where you are. So the Mitzudas David said, if we are now in the time of Geula, what does it mean then that I will first go and scatter them like seed and disperse them? That doesn't make any sense. So you have no choice but to manipulate the word and understand it to mean that even though in the past I've scattered them throughout the entire world, that's not a problem for me. I'll find you and I'll bring you back home. Rashi doesn't want to go that far and manipulate the grammar of the pasuk. He wants to read the words literally. I will first scatter you. So that is forcing Rashi to understand that this entire section is not describing the time of redemption. We are depicting the era of Golus, Goyla, an era, a period of time where we are in exile. And during this period of time, we will still increase in number, but yet we will still be dispersed throughout the entire world. And Rashi here says something very powerful. Rashi says the reason, this is a very, very deep, deep Rashi. This you don't hear about, you don't hear this idea, you don't hear anywhere. That the reason why we are scattered throughout the world is that allows us to increase in number. Let's take a step back. What's the typical reason? What was the classic? Like, you know, Coke Classic? Remember that those days? New Coke? I just saw a whole thing about that recently. That's what I got to say. Coke Classic. What's the classic? The classic explanation as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu scatters us throughout the entire world. And they'll tell you, Kabbalistic approach, in order to extract the nitzoytzois of Kedusha throughout the entire world. Hashem made a world, and there's sanctity in every corner of the world. Everything in this world has potential to be elevated for the purpose of Kodesh. When we were living in Eretz Yisrael, and we had a Beis HaMikdash, and it was the Hashuas HaShechina, then we were magnified. We were empowered, we were equivalent to a magnet. A magnet has pull. if you have a very, very strong magnet, and there's a piece of metal on the other side of the room, if your magnet is so strong, so powerful, the little pieces of metal on the other ends of the room will magically just gravitate towards the magnet. You have a super duper ultra powered magnet and you put it in the center of the room, all of the little pieces of metal throughout the entire room, the chairs and the tables that are metal, just somehow start converging towards the magnet. When Klal Yisrael is living in Eretz Yisrael and there's a Beis HaMikdash and the Shechinah is residing amongst them, we are a magnet. And all of the nitzotzos of Kedusha, the sparks of Kedusha, magically gravitate to us. But when the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed and the Shechinah is not resting amongst us, we're not a magnet. We have absolutely no pull. We don't have that power to naturally draw to us sanctity. So what do? We got a lot of hard work. We have to manually go out there to the world and seek out those little pieces of metal and pull them in. Pull them in. If we're not empowered, if we're not naturally a magnet that things will naturally gravitate to us, we got to go out there. Golos, Hashem dispersed us throughout the entire world. Because if you live in America, America has what to offer. There are sparks of sanctity in America. There's a way of life in America that can be elevated for the service of Hashem. You go to Europe, there are elements in their way of life that can be elevated. You go to Russia, every part of this world has something to offer. Something to use to elevate the channel for Kedusha. If we merited to be in Eretz Yisrael with the Shekhinah, we would be a magnet. All of these elements would naturally gravitate to us in Eretz Yisrael. We wouldn't have to go do the hard work. We can live in Eretz Yisrael, live a good life, work hard, serve Hashem, and do what our mission is. And things would just come to us. But when we don't have that magnetic pull, we have to go out there to the world and pick up with our bare hands the scraps of metal, all of those sparks of holiness, and elevate them by ourselves. That's the classic approach to explain why Golus Churban demands we are dispersed throughout the world. That's classic. That's Golus 101.
You say the ghost is because Nisrachakum Me'alad
Masainu. Why?
Because of the Chatoyim that we did.
That's right. So just because we did Chatoyim, why does that mean that we have to be scattered throughout the entire world? Let's settle down in Uganda. Why do we have to be in America and in Russia and travel the whole world? For 1,009, we've been expelled from every country in the world.
Isn't the phraseology...
Hirsch had this theory that we were in Golus to be or La Goyim, whatever that means.
Okay, that's really part of it. That's really part of the same idea. That's really what it is. When we're out there throughout the entire world so they actually can see us and they learn from us and they inspired and things happen. But if we were living, when there's a Beis HaMikdash, how are you going to fulfill Or LaGoyim if they're never going to see a Jew? They're not going to see a Jew. We're living in Eretz Yisrael.
It worked.
What?
In fact, apparently it worked while we had a Beis HaMikdash.
Well, how did it work? Because...
the Beis HaMikdash itself was the magnet.
Oh, the Beis HaMikdash and us. The sanctity was so intense, it radiated throughout the entire world. And people were naturally inclined and curious and were drawn to Eretz Yisrael, to the Beis HaMikdash, Beis Tefillah Chol HaAmim, and naturally all of their, everything that the world had to offer was channeled and was dedicated to serve Hashem. But when you don't have this power, then you have to go out there yourself and pick up the pieces. You got to go out there.
That's what the Chabad Shaluchim are doing now.
Okay, Enochanami. That's what Enochanami did to a degree. Yes, correct. Now, that's classic. But it's very interesting. It's not what Rashi says. Rashi here sneaks in an entirely different answer. And he says that if when you live in Golos, this is something which you have to go bring in the big minds who study these things. I don't know what field, what's the term for this particular field. That when you are in Golos, it influences you to increase your numbers. If you were living in areas, what is the average size family? So this is what it says in Rashi. The average size family, if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, is going to be a lot smaller when you're living a life of peace and tranquility than when you're living in Golos. When you're living in Golos, if you could have 15 children, go for it. If you're living in Eretz Yisrael, no, 5 children is enough. Do we relate to this? What?
Go back to the Mitzrayim model.
They had 6. Shisha.
Yeah, I knew also Cain Yerbeba, Cain Yifroth.
Excellent. Right? Excellent.
Under those circumstances, that's when the population explosion occurred.
Now, but the problem is, here's the problem. The problem is, when I learned that pasuk, I think many like me, I didn't view that pasuk as a natural response to Chasher Ya'anu also. I always understood that as there was something in Shemayim going on. I always look at this pasuk from the world of Kabbalah, the Chasher Ya'anu Oysoi, that the Egyptians wanted to destroy the Jewish, so Hashem is pulling the strings. So Hashem, a woman gets pregnant, 6 children? I didn't expect 6 children to come out. I only expected 1 child to come out. Hashem is pulling the strings. Rashi here indirectly is saying, no, this is not this pasuk, the Chasher Ya'anu Oysoi, Kein Yibim, Kein Yifroth, it's a Chiddush. Is nothing spiritual. This is it's hard for us to relate to this. This is really true. It is a natural mindset. It's a natural frame of mind of humanity, the human condition. You try to exterminate me? You know, I was planning to have 3-4 children, but if you're trying to take my children and throw them into the Nile and destroy, you know what? We're going to have 12 children. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, the Chasher, response to the Holocaust.
The Chasher Ya'anu Oysoi, the more you want to destroy us, Kein Yirbe V'Kein Yifroth, forget that's about Shemayim.
That's not a natural thing. That's a spiritual thing.
Oh, so that's what I told you. That's exactly what I thought. It's exactly what, we're going in circles here.
You're not going to find that among other peoples.
But Rashi, see, that's not what Rashi is saying. Rashi here appears to say, and I told you, we're spoiled because we're living in relative peace and tranquility, so we don't see the big picture, but Rashi here seems to be saying an idea, and this idea obviously this needs heavy duty psychologists to really delve into the depth of if the truth of this idea, if it's true or not. But Rashi says, why did Hashem scatter us throughout the entire world? Why, if we have to go into Golos, first of all, just because the Beis HaMikdash, if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, that's itself a punishment. We have to leave Eretz Yisrael? Okay, so maybe if we have to, so let's all go together, we'll have a new country. We'll start up some new country somewhere in the middle of Saudi Arabia.
A startup nation
somewhere. And we're yearning to return to our homeland. Why is it that the nature of history, Jewish history, is Jews are scattered. Mifuzor u'miforod bein ho'anim. Why? Why is that a consequence of Golos? Let's stick together. We'll all be together in America. We'll all be together in Iran. We'll all be together in Uganda. Why is the story of the Jewish people of mifuzor u'miforod bein ho'anim? Everywhere. So you'll tell me because Jews don't get along, we don't like each other, and if everyone has to go have their own territory?
It's not a net, because we're not, in a moral sense, and as Rabbi Grunblatt writes also, we are not a normal people.
Fine. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has arranged it.
And therefore, because we are transcendent, we are a world-class people, and therefore we're all over the world. That's the theory. More of a metaphysical theory.
That's touching upon what we said before. But I'm trying to present to you here a new idea, fresh bagel, a fresh bagel based on Rashi. And you Ramachol, you hit the nail on the head with the pasuk, which I didn't think of. The chasher ya'anu also kein yirbe v'chein yifrotz. I always looked at that pasuk only in terms of Kabbalah, of mystical, esoteric understanding. As far as we were concerned, leave me alone. You want to torture me? You're in a concentration camp? You're in a labor camp? I'm not having children here. Why would I want to have a child in a labor camp? What do I bring a child into a world of misery? They should kill him? I wouldn't want to have children if I'm in a labor camp. So, but the pasuk says, but what does it say in the pasuk? They're in a labor camp, and every woman is giving birth to 6 children. So how did I understand this pasuk all along? And this is the way probably most people. It was lemala miderech hateva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was calling the shots. He was doing it. We didn't even know what's going on. We were in a labor camp. We were being tortured. And look at that. Women are giving birth to 6 children in one shot. Wait a minute. This doesn't make any sense. Hashem's in charge. Hashem is preparing us for the Geula. Hashem wants us to have 600,000 men, 3 million people. He's preparing us, whether you like it or not. It's a zechor la'avraham li'yitzhak u'li'yakov. Along comes Rashi. And Rashi seems to say, no, it has nothing to do with Hashem. Obviously, everything has to do with Hashem, but this is the human condition. If someone tries to exterminate you, you fight back. You fight back. If the goal of Egypt is you only can have one child, like in China, or you can't have any children, you're trying to control me? You're telling me what to do? You're telling me you're going to control me? Just the opposite. I'll do what I want to do. I will go and I'll have 20 children, 10 children, 6 bekeres echad. I'll take special pills that will make sure I'll have 6 children bekeres echad. According to what Rashi seems to be saying, this is not a pasuk that should be understood from a mystical, esoteric interpretation of Kabbalah. This is a natural human condition. If v'chasher ya'anu oisoy, ken yireh v'chen yifroitz, you fight back. And in other words, this pasuk could even have been said lahavdil bat goyim. If the Egyptians would have taken.
Rashi is arguing against the ruchnius of Mitzrayim. It's just the fact that the children are increasing like they did in Mitzrayim, not to take away from what Hashem wanted in Mitzrayim. Doesn't mean that.
I don't understand. I don't say. Well, what do you say? What are you trying to say?
It's saying here from the Rashi Verovu Kamosh Verovu B'Mitzrayim. Is that right?
Correct. But go further. But that's not the Rashi I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on the next Rashi. I'm focusing on Bo'amim. Ki Adam Hazareas Olahachnis Kama Koirim. Like a person who disperses seed in order. Why do Rashi have to add these words? Lahachnis, for the goal of bringing in ultimately kama koirim, an enormous crop to multiply. When you seed, what do you do when you seed? Why is this pasuk giving a metaphor of seed? Because what do you do with seed? You disperse it over a very large area, and what happens? You bring in an enormous yield. If you take this seed and you just put all your seed in one location, it doesn't grow that much because they're all fighting for the same nutrients in the same dalet amos of the ground. You have a nice collection of seed and you dump it down within a very small area. How much grows? A few bushels and that's it. But if you take the same seed and you disperse it over a very, very large area, they have room to breathe. Each seed, then when the day is over, the yield of your produce is enormous. So Rashi here says, why am I going to disperse you throughout the entire world? This is a new idea. I never heard this idea before. Why am I going to disperse you amongst all the nations of the world? The mifuzar, umiforod bein ho'amim. Because when the natural consequence of being dispersed throughout a larger area, you produce more. The population grows infinitely more than if you'll just stick together. If you stick together in one land, then you're limited in how much you will grow. But when you are dispersed over a very large area, then somehow, for some reason, yeah, why it's so, you need to survive. You need to survive when you win, and that triggers a desire to increase your population.
Wait. Saying Shisha Bekeres Echad is due to their desire to have many children. But it can't be, because the normal way things work, Al Pi Hatev
has one child
at a time.
Okay.
So, and so this is exclusively mystical and spiritual.
Okay, true. Yes and no.
Maybe you want to say this shot in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chisha Vesakeitz. In other words, he wanted to, the plan to get them out at 210 instead of 400 was the Chisha. Why does it say Chisha? He counted the numbers. He needed to get up to 600,000. And that was the way he
to accelerate. The Chasher Yanu Oysoi. Okay. First of all, it doesn't say Shisha Echad, that's a Chazal. The Pasuk just says the basic words of Echashar Yanu is Okein Yibir V'chein Yifritz. Chazal go along and they say Shisha Bekeres Echad.
Well, they're trying to make up the numbers, how it came from 70 up to 600,000 or 3 million, how it could possibly be. So those are the Shisha V'sakeitz means they had to come up with a figure, they had to do the math and work it out.
Okay.
Okay, so you have the hints.
Okay, let's go further. V'chayu im b'nei'em, v'chayu es b'nei'em, v'chayu im. He says the word es in this context means im. I'm on page 810. I'm on page 810 in Rashi, Pasik Tes. V'chayu, they will live es b'nei'em. Es in this context means im, means with their children. Next Rashi, ulevonon, ulevonon, zebes ha-migdash. We learned before in the Mitzvah that the word ulevonon means Eiver ha-yardin, it means the west side of the Yardin. And the word Gilad is the east side of the Yarden. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says it means the word Levana means Zebes Hamigdash. V'lo yimotze lohem. The Targum says V'lo yisoyfek lohoin. It will not. There will not be enough room. There will not be enough space. No one really is explaining what this means over here. The entire Klaishul will come. Will return, and the land will not be able to hold them because they will be so numerous. There will not be sufficient space to contain them. So how are they going to survive then? A miracle? It's called Eretz HaTzvi. Eretz HaTzvi, the skin of a deer. It expands on the animal's back. When you skin a deer, the skin shrivels, and you wonder, how in the world was this skin, this hide, able to cover the entire animal? It's a miracle. And that's part of the way, that's why Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi. Simply means the land that's beautiful. Tzvi means beautiful, but it also means a land that is similar to a deer. What is the unique characteristic of a deer? That its hide expands to cover its entire body, even though from our perspective, it's impossible. Because after the animal, the deer dies, and you remove the hide, it shrivels to a teeny, teeny a portion of what it was before. And you then realize retroactively that the hide, It miraculously expanded to cover and contain the entire animal. Eretz Yisrael is the same. Al Derech HaTeva, there is no way that this little piece of land, the size of Rhode Island, can contain the entire Klal Yisrael. Can contain, now there are 15 million Jews in the world. The right of return, the law of return. The law of return entitles 15 million people to return at this moment to Eretz Yisrael. Where in the world are you going to house 15 million people today? The law of return, the law says you all have a right to come back and become a citizen. If you're a Jew, and 15 million people supposedly today can prove they're Jews, how are you going to be able to put another 15 million people in the land? Eretz Hatzvi. Don't worry about it. Just like the hide of the deer expands, so too the land will expand to accommodate everyone. Here the Pasuk makes that point by saying, V'lo yimotzei lohem, it will not be sufficient, the land will not be large enough to contain us. Al derech ha-teva. Pasuk Gid Aleph, V'av b'yam tzara, V'salver tzara b'tzor ha-yosheves b'soy ha-yam, V'hi roish le'edoim. So Rashi over here is a little bit more precise than the Mitzudas David. Rashi yesterday said that the word Yam is a metaphor for the Umay Sa'ilam, the nations of the world that are scattered like the waters of the sea. just like the Yam is vast, it's massive, so too the world, the nations of the world are massive, they're vast, they're all over. And Hashem says, in the time of Mashiach will be the day of reckoning, where Hashem will bring punishment, retribution upon the Umay Sa'olam that are compared to the Yam. Rashi is a different, same idea, but a little bit different. B'soichaya means tsar, tire. Tire was an island in the Mediterranean. We really do not have clarity where tsar, the original tsar was. It was the metropolis of Edom, of what Edom represented, back in the day, in the time of the Bayis Rishon, and many have a theory that tsar sank. There are islands in the Mediterranean that are now underground. In the Mediterranean, somehow they do scuba diving, and there are actually remnants of what appear to be civilizations that used to exist. And how in the world did they get down there? No one knows. It seems they were islands that sunk. How? When? How this happened? Who knows? But Rashi here is coming to draw from that popular approach, because he calls that Hashem will bring punishment upon on the middle of the Yam. V'ovar v'ayom tzara, a great tragedy will come upon something that is in the Yam. The Yam here refers to the Mediterranean, specifically to the island of Tsar, which is the capital of Edom in the time of the building of the Bayis Rishon.
Isn't the city T-Y-R-E Tsar?
Yeah. So today there's a Tyre, which is on land, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. It's up north. That's a new Tsar. That's like New York, New Jersey. That's a reincarnation. That's not the original. Well, that's the idea. That's the theory. No one really has. I don't think you're going to find
that. Well, you see, in the Pacific, you have a lot of islands in the Pacific. In the Atlantic, you don't see any. When they say that there used to be a lot of islands in the Atlantic also.
And they sunk.
But they just don't exist anymore because they were overcome by the ocean.
They sunk. There are still a couple of islands. There's a famous.
Yeah, but there's very few. If you look on the map, you see all these little islands in the Pacific, but you don't see any in the Atlantic.
There's only one island in the Atlantic. It's an army base. The United States. I think the United States. I don't know if they own it, but they have a very important army
basically
base.
Basically, you don't see like it's not like the Pacific is dotted with all these little islands. But the Atlantic, they said, there used to be.
Now here, but we're dealing with the Mediterranean. We're not even dealing with the Mediterranean. This is a very popular approach. Is it true or not? I don't know. But Rashi, the Rishonim seem to work with this. Is that it used to be back in the day, in the time of the Bayis Rishonim, there were islands in the Mediterranean. And
after one big storm a few years back, Montserrat was on. They said Montserrat was on the verge of just disappearing off the map.
Okay, so that's
something. It was just goodbye. It was almost gone.
Tsar appears to have been one of these islands. Today, there's a nation called Tyre, that's on land up north from Eretz Yisrael. That appears to be a reincarnation. That at some point in time, people got together and they decided to make a new city and they wanted to name it after the old Tyre that disappeared off the face of the earth.
Or it could have been part of his kingdom.
Okay, so it was a colony of his kingdom. And they also named it. They named it by their name as well. Just like you have many cities all over the world that have a name, and that name, where does it originate from? It originates from some ancient country. Look at Yericho, there's a curse. You're not allowed to rebuild Yericho. So what's the Yericho today? That's not the same location. It's adjacent. It's in the vicinity of the old Yericho, and they built a new city with the name as a zecher for the old city, but they did not build it on the same location as where the old Yericho was. Okay, let's go further. So Rashi learns that's what it means. It does not.
Just one question. He says that Tsar is part of Edom.
Yes, 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 yes. Absolutely.
Is that in the Psukim somewhere? Is that understood?
I think yes. I think that's very popular.
Tsar, Edom originally was in the south.
No, obviously Edom is in the other direction. Edom is the east, southeast. And Tsar is at least west. I don't know how much northwest, but it's west in the Mediterranean. So how in the world, you're asking a very good question, how could Edom, whose main territory, according to basically everyone, is in the southeast of Eretz Yisrael, how could their capital be in the west of Eretz Yisrael, in an island in the middle of the Mediterranean? So it's not a question, because obviously they expanded and they colonized different parts of the world, and this became their central, their pride and joy. Their original territory.
It could have been a stepping stone towards Rome.
Okay, that's true, because that's going even more. That's going all the way to the west. Absolutely. But there's one thing we know, that in the Torah, when the Torah talks about the land of Edom, the land of Edom is a chunk of land somewhere that's southeast of Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's, I think, it's accepted by everyone. Where exactly are you going to draw the boundaries in the modern world today of what used to be the ancient territory of Edom? El Esav Nasati Ishar Seir? Edom, where? I don't know. No one seems to really know exactly where you're going to draw the boundaries of the old Ashen, the old Edom. But certainly, Edom expanded. It expanded. It conquered parts of the world. It colonized islands and cities elsewhere. And Tyre became their pride and joy. It became their capital. It became a central hub for commerce in the Mediterranean, to the trade with all the other nations. And this is going to be destroyed. Over here it says in the pasuk that I'm going to bring upon them Churban Gavra Vayom Tzara V'tava Tzar B'Tzar Hayosheves B'Soich Hayom V'hi Roish L'Edom. This was the Roish, this is the most significant portion of Edom. V'hika HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asher Hu HaMakeh. This is a Mikra Kotzer. Does not tell you who is the one that is doing the hitting. And Rashi explains, that's not a kasha. We always have these type of sukkim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that is doing, that is involved in the hakah. Yakeh vayom galim rabim lahashkiya esor. Hashem will cause esor to sink. Hashem will send massive waves, which will cause this island, esor, to be flooded and to disappear. Who would ever imagine? Can you imagine such a thing, that a whole chunk of land, a whole massive island with a whole civilization upon it will just sink to the bottom of the ocean, bottom of the sea. It's a shocking thing. And that's what it says. Kol mitzulos yor, he mitzrayim. Now he says, what's going to happen to all of the mitzulos, the depths of Egypt? They'll also suffer enormously. They will dry up. And that's very true. Isn't that amazing? Because we know from the map, if you look at all of this they say, they study satellite maps, and you can see from far, you can see indentations in the earth, massive channels, very, very, very complex network of like arteries, like these indentations in the ground in Mitzrayim, and it's clear as day that these used to be rivers. These sections that you really can only see and detect from a bird's eye view, from a satellite, used to clearly be very significant network of rivers which irrigated the land, irrigated Egypt. And today,
Sahara Desert, well, they say it's about 15 miles down, is a lot of water. I mean, underneath the Sahara Desert, which is growing every year by about 15 feet or so, the Sahara is getting larger, but there used to be water. I mean, I don't know at what time, and the earth wasn't created the way we know it, but there is water under the Sahara Desert.
And you see from satellite images, there used to be a very sophisticated network of rivers running through Egypt. And the pasuk here predicts all of these rivers will dry up. And indeed it did. Now, by the way, when you learn these psukim and you're a maimon, it really causes you to think very deeply about global warming. Okay, they didn't have carbon emissions in those days. There was no carbon in the time of Tsar. Not that we don't know they had carbon emissions, and in Egypt, what were they doing? They were damaging the environment. Do you really think they were doing something then equivalent to what we do to the environment today? And yet, look what happened. Islands, the Chazal tell us, massive islands just disappeared, and massive, sophisticated arteries of rivers that were flowing through this region just dried up. Why did it dry up? So you're going to say because the people who live then, al derech hateva, they damaged the climate, the environment with carbon emissions, the ozone layer, and that's what caused this to happen? Impossible. So what do you see at this point in time? This is a natural occurrence. Is it because of their sins? Well, the pasuk seems to say yes, but it has nothing to do with man damaging, causing harm to the environment. So where does that leave us today? And obviously pollution is no good. Obviously, pollution is a horrible thing. Nothing to discuss. And obviously, you don't want to destroy the world, but to go to an extreme and say that the major changes in the climate that are happening, it's because of human beings. Is that a correct thing to say? Well, if you don't learn Nach, then I guess who's going to stop you from saying that? Maybe it's true. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not true. Maybe why, you'll probably say, yeah, why not? It makes sense, right? If you go on causing damage, but look, you look at this time of history, which the people who deal with global warming don't believe in. They couldn't care less about this. They don't even know what it says here. You see that according to Chazal, major changes occurred in the world. Places, islands just sunk. And Egypt, a land that was fertile, that had rivers flowing through it, just dried up. And it cannot possibly be due to human intervention, because they did not have the technology to destroy the world at that point in time. So today, although obviously it's not a good thing to cause damage, that if you know you're causing damage, but to come to the conclusion and say with definitively that what we're doing is destroying the world, that's irresponsible. It's responsible to be, you know, to do what you can, not to cause harm, but to make that conclusion, that is not a Torah hashkafa. At least it does not appear to be a Torah hashkafa after you see how major changes did occur in the past. Let's go further. That concludes the section. Let's just start for a few moments, a little bit of the Radak. The Radak back on page Eshrakah. This is a very fascinating word. We already had so far two Perushim. Let's see. I'm going back to page 811. 811, Pasuk Ches. Let's start just a little bit for a few moments. Eshrakah lochem inyan hanoas hasifasayim b'kol. The word is the movement of the lips to produce sound. Doesn't tell us what this is. Everyone here, if you notice, everyone struggles. Everyone is going to struggle to translate these words precisely. Just to go back to the, let's just read the whole thing. We'll come back, and we'll turn the whole thing. We'll come back. The chayin v'sharak loy miktzei aretz the inyan akab same. Then let's read this for sure. Yesh refarshim ki mibnei hatzarais shahayu oisim luchem malche yavon hayu mifuzorim bein ho almois. So the Radak, he continues to learn this pasuk as he did in the previous psukim, as a continuation of describing the events of Yavon, the Golus of Yavon and the Nitzachon of the Chashmonoim. And he's telling us an historical fact, which you don't hear much about when you read about the history of Hanukkah. You don't hear much about this, is that according to the Radak, in the time of Hanukkah, many Jews were no longer living in Eretz Yisrael. Jews were scattered throughout the entire world. And when they heard about the victory of the Chashmonaim over the Yavanim, they returned. They came back home to Eretz Yisrael. Do you recall ever reading about this? I don't. Not that I know very much. But when you read about the story of Hanukkah and you hear about the wars of the Maccabeim and about the Hanukkah miracle and the entire era, Alexander the Great, and the 52 years of Shmad, they don't talk about this. They don't say that Jews were expelled from the land. They were living in other countries, and with victory, there was an aliyah. Everyone suddenly returned to the land. You don't hear about this. I'm sorry, I don't recall. Maybe I'm totally wrong. And according to the Radak, it's a pasuk in Navi. It is a fact. This is as authentic as it gets. In the time of the Chashmonoim, in the time of the Yavanim, the Jews will be scattered. And with the victory of the Chashmonoim, I will whistle, I will signal to all the Jews scattered throughout the world, it's time to come home. And they will come home. Okay, you don't hear about this, but that's what he says. And before we conclude, we'll stop it. Before we conclude, just to review, look at the difference of how each of the Mefarshim translate the word Eshrakah. Just to go back to the Mitzudois Tzion. Okay, the Mitzudois Tzion, he says, Eshrakah, Inyan Tziftzuf Kol Haba B'kibbutz Hasvasayim. Tziftzuf. What does that word Tziftzuf mean? I don't know. The fluttering of sound. A Tziftzuf Kol. It's not just a sound. It's a sound.
Chirping?
Like a bird. A bird chirps. A chirping of sound that comes b'kibbutz hasifasayim, when you bring your lips together and try to push air between them. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi, what does he say? Kiderech hashorkim l'simen ois, like the way of people, he doesn't even translate the word, people who whistle as a simen ois, lovo elov hato'e baderech. Radak, what does it mean, this word? Eshrakol lohem inyin hano'as hasifosayim b'kol, the movement of lips to produce a sound.
The word sharkim is similar to the word shriek.
Okay, in English, the etymology in Echanami, v'hu simen hakriya, it is a sign of calling. Everyone here, as you see, struggles to precisely define this usual word and how it fits into the context of what we are discussing. All right, we're going to stop over here. We'll learn Chumash in a few moments. Give me 30 seconds, we'll be back, and we'll start.
By the way, a shuruk.